Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Make It Sound Fiction. This is episode 11, and on this show, every week, we pick apart pop culture and media and everything that we like. My name is Nico, and I'm joined by my ever-present co-host,
Tyler.
And we're going to be talking about, two topics this week, as we do every week, because we like to get in and get out of your ears, I guess. So, Tyler, we were talking about something earlier this week. Why don't you kind of go into maybe this kind of very interesting discussion that we were having on Discord the other night?
It's kind of complicated. Yeah. It's okay, so it started with the developers of Cyberpunk 2077, which is like an upcoming game. I don't even know when it's coming out. CD Projekt Red, they also own like GOG, which is like a game service you can buy stuff from. They tweeted in response to somebody saying, somebody like quote tweeting a picture from Gamescom of like the developers showing off Cyberpunk. And they said, I want more guys. And it's like that's part of the quote tweet, and their response was, did you just assume their gender, which is just like a bad transphobic joke, and which they've deleted. They like both tweets have been deleted, and Cyberpunk like Twitter account like apologized and said like we're sorry for those who were offended, which is a bad apology. But obviously the joke is bad, the apology's bad. But I guess the thing that we were talking about with regards to this that is an issue with like developers like CD Projekt Red and sometimes like I don't like this isn't an exact like correlation to something to like a developer like Valve, but it has that same kind of thing where these big developers that own that have like a lot of money that can like make games, because the thing with CD Projekt Red is they make games like The Witcher, and they make games that are kind of like on their own time, I guess is what you would say, right? They're games that are, they aren't like the sequel to Assassin's Creed, right? They're making kind of their own sort of, they own their franchises for the most part. Because Cyberpunk 2077 is a pretty unique thing, I think. I think it's based off of like the board game, right? Or the, not the board game, the like tabletop game.
And the tabletop game is based off the book.
But like they're the only one making this type of like video game. I think the problem with these developers, I guess, that what makes them like make these jokes and think it's okay is that they just do this thing where they act like they're for like the gamers with quotations, or like like Reddit people, and they have this like, I don't know, like I don't even know how to explain it, because it's like it's this weird like player developer relationship that seems like everybody is like together, but it also is catering to a group of people that are not good and they act like they're above everybody. They act like they're different than other developers because they're making the game that everybody wants, and they're saying the things that people want them to say, like this horrible joke, and then like apologize and say like sorry to those who were offended, but are still like hey, if you weren't offended then it was funny, right? Like it's such a, I think it's a really bad thing, because there's other instances of this, like the episode we were talking about, the World of Warcraft bad like jokes, like the this is fine joke. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like that's a level of that where it's this idea, it feels like the developers are trying to say like, yeah, we read Reddit too, like we also saw that meme, so we're gonna put it into our game as like a like a way to like sort of shake hands with the gamers that are playing it, and I think it makes people who play those games feel like they're being listened to, but it ends up being this really horrible like relationship. I feel like it makes the games worse. It makes tweets like this happen, and I think it's not good.
I think maybe a good way of sort of boiling down what you're saying into a thesis is that gamer culture is bad. I think that's what you're kind of getting
and
at.
Catering to that is bad. And it's sad when you see developers like this be held up as like, oh, they're different. And they're, because they even do things like, I don't remember the exact thing, but because I don't have like a screenshot of it or whatever, but there was something in The Witcher that when it launched, I think it's when like there was some feature in The Witcher that like when you clicked on it in the game, they had like a paragraph about how they were so great about including this feature that is like an ease of use thing, because other developers don't, and gamers have always wanted this feature, whatever it is. I don't know if it was like fast travel or what it was. Mm-hmm. It was something. And they're so like, CD Projekt Red is so proud of themselves for being like for the gamers, and it and but then but like do you want to, I guess the problem is like I don't think you want to be for the gamers, and that's what is so bad.
But that's the thing, is that I think a lot of people who develop video games are, and this is something that's a problem with the industry, is a lot of people who are get video game developers are also gamers.
Right.
And a lot of studios self-select for that. Like, remember when 2 weeks ago, and we really didn't get to discuss this at all, but when the big Sexism at Riot article dropped a couple weeks ago, one of the things that came up a bunch was the reason that a lot of women were getting bounced out of maybe even the interview process was this, like, big emphasis on only hiring gamers.
Yeah,
gamers who gamers. Are gamers, real gamers. Yeah. And that's one of the ways that they frequently won't, that video game companies frequently won't hire, like, a lot of marginalized people.
Because they think,
people.
Like, if you don't play games, you can't make a good one.
Or that only certain people, I think the bigger issue is that only game culture has a very defined idea of who plays games. That's why there's so much gatekeeping around what is a game, why there's so much gatekeeping about what a gamer looks like, what a gamer sounds like, what a gamer does in a game.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because you create this homogenous culture, which is disingenuous to start with, and also bigoted in a lot of ways. So you get this idea that a gamer can only look one way, sound one way. So when people hire gamers to then be game developers, that attitude never changes, because look where it got them.
Yeah.
And
people who play games love that. Like, they they play games.
It feels like, well, this game was made by somebody that I could go and sit and have a beer with and just talk about our favorite video games, versus, like, this is a person who's working a job, who's making an artistic creative project, or who's doing a certain skill, which also, I mean, like, let's not even get into this, but that also obscures the labor issues that go into, like, that, you know, your favorite game wasn't birthed wholesale out of a group of people in, like, 3 days. It was time, it was money, it was labor, it was manpower, that sort of thing. Like, the idea that it's just this thing that comes out of gamers, like, sort of pure, like, a river of, like, fun and entertainment, obscures a lot of the things that we are now seeing as, like, these huge labor issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it sells this, it behooves game companies to sell themselves as also being full of gamers, because then people
it's
want
why they're
to
all on, like, Reddit now.
Yeah.
Like, you see a lot of, like, even Overwatch developers are, like, responding to Reddit threads, like, yeah, we should look into this. And I know that, like, obviously, like, bug fixing and stuff is, you know, a good thing, obviously. But just the idea that, like, oh, our developers are just on Reddit now and they're listening to us, so that means that, like, our voice can be heard all the time, all the time, it's becoming a thing for, like, a lot of games, especially as games are becoming more, like, online services all the time.
Yeah.
It's this, like, weird need to have, like, feedback and have that always listened to. But to the point where, like, you're saying, it kind of impacts the whole artistic process to the point where it's, like, you get horrible, like, I mean, like, this joke, but then also just, like, games that have, you know, ingrained bad ideas.
Well, look at Jessica Price, too. That's also a whole issue of gamers feeling like somebody is an outsider and a threat to the game collective, and she needs to fucking go. She needs to go, because she was insulting to one of us. Us with a capital U, the fans, the gamers, and you can see how it very quickly gets super toxic. So when you have people inside making these games who are also of that mindset or faking that mindset, like, I can't speak to whether somebody really thinks they're a gamer or not, but that kind of mentality carrying into the developers who make those games, or the social media people who represent those games, making these sorts of jokes with no recognition how they hurt their other fans. Because let's be clear, there are a lot of trans people who want to play 2077. There's a lot of trans people who've played The Witcher. There's a lot of trans people who have played all of CD Projekt Red's games. So when they represent themselves in this way, they're basically not thinking about the fact that these jokes being a part of gamer culture are hurting other gamers, but they don't see trans people as being other gamers because the game culture has so rallied around jokes and ideas that are actively violent and hostile to certain segments of the gamer culture.
Yeah, and they just think that that's everyone, or they, I guess it's more malicious if they don't think that's ever, if they don't think gamers are everyone, but it's just like a lot of their,
it's something you don't have to think about too hard.
Yeah.
If you like, I think a better way of thinking of it is like, if you are not a person who has to deal with that gatekeeping, it's very easy not to think about it.
Yeah.
It's and very it's just, easy to not see it as a joke that gatekeeps people out.
Yeah. And I guess I hate it because it like, these games just sell so much, and people will write or like talk about on like threads and stuff about how like, oh my gosh, like finally a game without fetch quests, or you know what, stuff like that, stuff like gamer problems, like weird, like it, oh, finally a game without loot boxes or whatever. And these games are so popular because of that, or like they get a lot of attention because of that. And but then they do stuff like this, and it's like, but we shouldn't be, I don't know, we shouldn't be okay with like developers just like catering to just a small subset of people who play their games, I guess. Like, I don't know, the fact that this tweet and the apology exist don't like, just don't surprise me, because the CD Projekt Red has been like this forever, and a lot of developers are try to do kind of what they do a lot, like a lot more today too. It just affects the games themselves too. Like, even though this is a social media person, probably, I guess we don't actually know, it's probably still in the game, you know, like in some way. Like, well, there's still probably people that work on it.
There's people who work on it, but here's the thing. Is it okay? So let's just say for you know, an argument's sake.
Yeah.
Well, it was just a joke. It was just a joke that's unconnected. The social media person is just being a dick or whatever. But here's the thing. There's already been multiple instances of the game developers themselves being sort of wishy-washy and sort of unwilling to really talk about non-binary genders being in the game.
Yeah.
So is the line between how they represent themselves on social media and what the tenor of their game is going to look like, is that line really thin, or is it a pretty substantial one? And I'm saying that I'm thinking it's a little bit more substantial than people want to think. That if you are coming from a place where you don't think that a social media person tweeting that is bad, you might have a problem inside of the castle walls as well.
Yeah.
About how you think about gender, about how you think about trans, you know, trans people in your community and things like that. And so to kind of get back to what your point is, what you're saying is that CD Projekt Red is in a unique financial position to sell themselves to gamers,
right,
with this image that they are more for gamers than any other game company out there.
I compare them to like Valve, because Valve owns a big like service like Steam.
Valve has the financial, Valve and CD Projekt Red in particular. And I would say even to some extent Blizzard as well.
Yeah, I was going to say Blizzard is kind of similar. I mean, they have other things, but I mean, they're all different. I mean, I'm sure GOG makes way less money than Steam, you know.
Absolutely, because Steam is the market juggernaut. But it's interesting to see how game companies operate when they have a little bit more freedom financially, in order to not be holden to publishers in quite the same way. Like,
yeah, because we compare this to something like, I don't know, like maybe Bungie or like Destiny stuff, or maybe I'm trying to think of like an example. Like even BioWare.
yeah,
has like
yeah.
apologized for things like this, and they still try to do this, but they can't because they have a lot more like expectations.
They have a lot of more financial obligations to yeah. people larger than them in order to make their games. And that's the interesting underpinning to how capital is so much a part of making consumer products and making entertainment and then finally making art. Is that like, so if you have a company like CD Projekt Red that can sort of operate a little bit more lawlessly because they are not as beholden financially, in terms of their creative concepts, in terms of their image and things like that, you run into these sorts of issues where they can present themselves as honestly as they want. And if their honesty about their selves as a company is, well, we're really here for the gamers. It's absolutely building this weird relationship that already is a problem in the games space, where consumers, gamers feel so entitled to things being about them.
Right. And they're so, they're always so like excited and like, so they put so much like reverence on developers like this for making stuff like this. Like, you know, everyone thinks the Witcher games are amazing because they're so unlike other games. And that is sort of true in some ways. Like there is there's a lot of like there's parts about them that do feel very unlike bigger games, I guess, like other AAA games out there. But but you still have some things are good, some things are really bad, you know, like they still have that horrible, like I hate that like they've decided that they want to make games for gamers when they could just use that independence more
to make games for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, gamers with a capital G. Because
big games, like other games like Mass Effect and stuff, already make games for gamers, you know? Like, they already do games that are, like, they're not for everyone in ways. So,
yeah, like,
it's just sad, I guess.
It's sad because it's like, man, what would CD Projekt, like, what would Cyberpunk 2077 look in the hands of people who definitely don't have that kind of money?
Yeah.
That's,
because you I see think- this on, you see this with, like, independent games where, like, you know, that's kind of their thing, is that like we can make games about like what we've wanted because other games never make them like this, you know?
Yeah.
Like a Gone Home or something, you know?
Yeah, but we just don't have like a $50 million budget or a $200 million budget. Or, and I've definitely seen this sort of happen in a lot of ways with like film too. Film is definitely under some of the same constraints of like, I want to make this film, but I'm going to have to do it with $2 million versus a studio picture that gets like $500 million and then just wastes it on making like the next Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Right.
That's like badly
that fails,
edited.
Probably because it's
badly
not
edited. Yeah. No women on, you know, whatever. Right. But it's interesting because then you see something like Thor Ragnarok to bring up a counterpoint. You give all of the Marvel money to, you know, Taika Waititi, and you see how much better that movie got. Like,
yeah, but they have, but they also are able to do that because of all the money. Like, they're able
exactly.
to just, yeah.
But it's interesting to see what a Marvel movie could look like when giving that amount of money to somebody who's sitting at the helm that has a different vision, who has a different set of life circumstances, who has a different
Black
sensibility.
Panther. Yeah, like, it's just, I guess I wish more games did that. I mean, there's maybe a couple games that have, but it's just, it's, I don't know, it's sad when, because, like, I think a lot of people are hoping that Cyberpunk is really, you know, good, especially since there's a lot of interesting things that could happen in that universe.
Yeah.
Because Cyberpunk is an interesting, like, it's an interesting, like, space, but or genre, but, like, I don't know. I guess I just lose confidence when they do stuff like this, like, tweet like this. And I guess after E3, I just forgot about CD Projekt Red being kind of crappy. And now I'm remembering it again. You know, it's like, now I'm like, oh no, this might not be as good of a game as I kind of want it to be. Like, and obviously that happens, but it's also just like, gosh, it's more disappointing, I guess. It's suddenly like, oh no, I forgot about CD Projekt Red being the way they are. So, and it, even with, like, again, with their apology for this tweet, it's bad because it's just like, oh, we're sorry for those who are offended. So they didn't even own the problem with the joke. So I don't know if I can trust them to make a game that, like, respects that, respects people.
That's why when people like myself or you or whatever complain about gamer culture being such a cesspool and people are like, okay, whatever, it doesn't have an impact on anything, it really does. If you're hiring these people into your companies, if you are hiring people who think that this stuff is acceptable, it absolutely has a normalizing effect, because then that, like, gutter sewage goes directly into the people making the stuff that goes back into the community, that gets hired in, that gets back out, that gets hired in, that gets back out. Like, it's a sewage cycle, you know? And it's why it's so important to hire people who have a different outlook and to put them in positions of power and to give them money and access. It's why making diverse games is of step and not the final solution,
right,
you know, to this problem, is because if, like, you know, you can make a game with tons of, like, women in it, but if everybody who made the game or touched the game or directed the game has a shitty, problematic attitude about women, do you really think the end result is going to be good? It's not.
Right.
If you have no women on your team and you're making a game about women, like, what's going to happen? I'm looking at you. Life is Strange. Like, it has an impact. It has an impact when you don't support projects financially that are doing good things. It's why you have to sort of, like, use this shitty capitalist society to, like, try to get the money to the people who need it most, like trans creators and people of color and, you know, and women and queer people, like, all this sort of stuff. Like, it's, that's why it's so important, because there's so many people who are CD Projekt Red who are gamers for gamers, you know, like, G for G, and, like, are, you know, like, buy gamers for gamers, and and are wholesale spitting out the stuff that makes everybody hate gamers so much, which is that transphobic, you know, homophobic, misogynistic, racist shit garbage that comes out of 4chan and Reddit, and that entitlement that comes from gamers thinking that their money is the biggest thing for improving games versus letting people make what they do. So the fact that, like you said, CD Projekt Red kind of leans into this is like, woof, guys.
Yeah, they could do so much better, especially since there's just no excuses. Like, they have the least amount of, they have no excuses, especially, like, the place they're in. Compared to other companies, like, they just don't have to do this stuff at all. And it's sad.
But they're gamers too, so they definitely want to give it to the gamers, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? God. Imagine, like, I just can't imagine thinking like that. Like, I just can't imagine being like, we heard you, gamers.
They get so much attention for it. Like, that's the thing, is, like, these games, just, like we said,
they,
like,
they sell well.
People love them. Like, people talk about them on, like, Reddit and stuff. And they're like, oh my gosh, finally a game that has all this stuff for me. And it's so insular and
limited. Why we're going to get a Cyberpunk 2077 that's completely toothless on every single level. It's going to be a great video game that says literally nothing.
Yeah, which is kind of a lot of games, but yeah.
Ah, video games. So good. And that's the thing, is, like, there, it's so funny that you can just talk about CD Projekt Red in such, like, in so many ways, because of how many times they fucked up in the last, like, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, how do you fuck up an E3 interview and then immediately the next month, like, fuck up social media stuff with transphobic jokes?
And they also had another tweet, too, that they had, too. I forget what it was, but they had another tweet issue. I forget. It was something similar, though.
Oh, yeah. It feels like at no point.
It was the GOG thing. It was the GOG retweeting the, like,
the what game was that?
Postal 3? Postal something? 3, whatever,
with
yeah.
With the date that Gamergate started.
Which was added later, like, to the game.
Yeah.
And it's on their service, and they were like, hey, this is funny, let's retweet it, you know? So
at no point does it feel like CD Projekt Red or Cyberpunk 2077 team has thought that maybe they need to change how they operate.
Yeah. And there, even if it is like separate things, which it sounds like maybe it is though, but like they're still okay with that being their Twitter presence, which is a lot.
There's an institutional problem here. There is an institutional problem here. Here's the thing. If CD Projekt Red owns GOG and is also the company that is putting together the Cyberpunk 2077 team, they have the institutional responsibility to send an email or create a program or get a fucking staff-wide, company-wide meeting together to say, hey guys, quit it. You know, like, yeah. I've been in big companies before. If there is something that's really bad, you make the fucking time to figure out how to fix it unless you don't think it's a problem.
Yeah, because their apology shows to me that they didn't think about it that hard. They just put it out there because people were complaining.
Yeah.
To them. I mean,
which is going to hurt their bottom line. But they still don't consider certain groups of people to be gamers worthy of their respect. Also, like, don't hire people that go to fucking 4chan or Reddit because this is... Don't hire people who have no understanding about what jokes they're making because, like, or if they do understand what kind of jokes they're making because... Woof. How do you not know in 2018 that a did you just assume their gender is straight out of the, like, hellish anus pits of 4chan? Like, how did you not know that? Why are you having a social media person on social media who doesn't understand where that came from? Every social media person and marketing person on the planet should have a handbook about what shitty internet culture looks like. Because this happens far too often, and it's fucking annoying. Like, sorry, I get so steamed about that as somebody who has a PR degree, and I know I can spot a fucking 4chan joke from a mile away. Like, God, this is who you're choosing to represent your company. They should be a fucking, like, they should be a social internet culture guru. They should know this stuff backwards and forwards.
I just feel like the apology, the part about the apology that's bad too is that it seems like they're still sort of proud of it. Like, they're like, yeah, that was pretty funny, but I mean, if you were offended, I guess, sorry.
Yeah. Ugh. Games are bad.
Yeah.
They're just bad. So, you know. But let's maybe talk about something that was better?
Yeah.
So this week, the Shooting Star short cinematic for D.Va from Overwatch was released to great fanfare at Gamescom.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that both me and Tyler are not simultaneously dead right now.
Yeah.
It was not as angsty or dramatic as both of us may have wanted.
Wasn't as tragic as I wanted it to be, but, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, I wanted to have some recognition of, like, her old village or her home life or something like that. It
kinda. And it was a weight on the... I mean, it was a big point of the story of, like, she doesn't want to fail again, or, like, you know, like, barely make it. She doesn't ever want to fail. Like, she doesn't want to lose to the Omnix that she has to fight, that she was hired, or, like, that, you know, like, training to fight for years. But, like, it's a lot more about the idea that she is very different than, like, the, you know, the persona that everybody sees as, like, the singer, the actor, actress, like, you know. So, and I think that's interesting too, because, like, we were talking about a little bit, that has similarities to, be like, esports players, where, like, there's been issues with the Overwatch League where there's players that are, like, super stressed out or depressed or whatever, and have a lot of, like, mental health issues, and but it seems like, you know, they're just an amazing pro player that is a, like, good at a hero in Overwatch, but we don't pay attention to, like, how they actually are in real life. And so that disconnect is, I think, important to show, but I guess I just thought I don't know. It's weird because I like that aspect of the short, but I thought they would go more into D.Va as a person than, I don't know. I guess it's hard. The short is weird. It's just very different than I thought it was going to be, which I guess that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just I expected a lot more out of it, I think.
We should probably go into what is actually the content of the short for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So basically the short is, you know, 6 or 7 minutes long, and it's a very sort of short moment that sort of takes place all within, like, you know, the six or seven minutes that it happens, basically, unlike the May short, which kind of takes place over maybe like a week or a month or whatever. It features, basically, it's immediately after a Kishin attack, which is their term for Omnix, attacking Busan, which is where the Mecha squad basically lives and operates on, sort of like in a sort of sea sitting military bunkery installation. Bunkery thing, yeah. And it's maybe a week after an attack. They're all sort of recuperating, and it's just D.Va and her friend Daehyun in the bunker. The rest of the other pilots, there are five of them, I believe, five or six, are out. And it sort of starts up as like a news broadcast, and then it cuts to D.Va and her friend sitting around, and she's fixing her mech, and she's doing tests, and they're just, you know, sort of talking about, you know, stuff like, well, you know, her friend, who's a guy, is like, we should be out there having glitz and glamour. And
yeah, because all the, like, sort of news reports are like, D.Va saves the day once again, you know, like,
you know, living it up and, you know, being out there and doing press conferences and stuff like that. When it's very clear that the reality is that this is very hard work. This is very difficult and injuring work that people getting through it's got a very like Evangelion feel to it, of like there is a real physical toll to this sort of stuff. And she's like, no, we gotta like run tests. And
yeah, because she was like, we barely won, like we can't just like go out and party or whatever, we have to be ready.
But there's an indication that these attacks come very regularly every couple of months, so that they have time, and they're running these tests, and it becomes apparent that there's already another attack coming in and nobody's there, and D.Va has to go out and do it herself. And she jumps into her mech, flies out, and starts fighting them. It's a real brutal battle, and it's sort of in the midst of the battle you realize, like, if any one of these things gets through, it's gonna mean thousands
of people
die.
They have like rockets attached to them and like are locking onto the city.
And she fights them. There's one left. It's very tense. He's going to get through. And, you know, she's like been kind of reluctant to accept help up until this point, even though her friend Daehyun is there and being kind of like on comms with her. And she's like, I can't do this alone. I need help. And so what he does is he figures out, well, let's, you know, overload the core of the mech. And okay, that kind of fails. So she jumps out of the mech and she shoots the core while she's falling, and it explodes. So you kind of get a lot of like canonic, you know,
like
sort of recognition
from the game.
Yeah, it's like her stuff from the game. It's like her abilities. And she blows
which
up the mech.
Which they've done with every short, pretty much.
Yeah,
so
basically. They've, you know, they talk like,
like in a way, in a kind of cynical way, they are a little bit commercially in that sense, because they even end with like, buy the game, you know. So,
buy the game, it's definitely like a commercial.
Not to like, not to get rid of like the quality of them or anything, but I'm just
saying, they're absolutely wonderful. They're six or 7 minute films, very like Pixar-esque, but like they're still selling a certain kind of image of the game for sure. So D.Va basically falls into the ocean, you know, the city is saved once again. But you get a sort of greater understanding about maybe the fact that she's very cavalier, but she also has this intense pressure on her. It's a lot different than I think some of how other pieces of media portray like lone wolf behavior, which is with men, it's very like heroic and very right. like they can pull it off because that's what, you know, these single dudes can do. Yeah. They can just, you know, go in and kick ass. Whereas D.Va's like, I have to do this alone, but I can't. But it's really important that I do this because otherwise people will die. And it's very like self-sacrificing in a way, almost yes, to the yeah. To a deathly end, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. And she doesn't seem against doing that if she has to. Yeah.
Yeah. And it ends out fine. Like, the cinematic ends fine. She just has a broken leg. But you kind of get this sense now that, like, how the media portrays her and the team is very propagandistic, where it's very much not true that these people are, these teens, these kids are routinely putting their lives on the line to make sure that everybody in the city is fine. And it's like, are they equipped to do this? Are they mature enough to do this? And there's a huge toll. And it's interesting because I think this is where the, like, fiction of what Blizzard has created for D.Va falls apart.
Yeah, because they don't ask any of those questions. They also don't really, like, they just don't go into any of that. They just
they don't
go into how kind of horrible this whole situation is. They just focus very much on D.Va and the guy. But, like, it doesn't really, and I think that's kind of what we wanted, is we wanted it to be more about, like, gosh, like, look at the character D.Va is, like, that's horrible. Like, she had, like, the thing she has to do, the whole idea of the mecha squad is so desperate, and
yeah,
there's so much money behind it for something they can't even control, like these regular omnic attacks that they don't understand, and like these young kids that were like just like they were all gamers, right? Like, it's
they were all
D.Va.
Gamers,
yeah,
they're all
now,
gamers.
Now they're like in the military, like, it's, and the place they live is also a map now, and you can walk around it, and it still is really sad. Like I don't know, it's really grim, like, how they live, and it's just the short really is a lot more like kind of positive, despite it's trying to show a little bit more of a, like, I don't know, like, a, it's trying to complicate the, like, heroism, I guess, but it doesn't go far enough, or as far as I wanted it to go, because yeah. I think D.Va's position is kind of more dire and more tragic to me than I think they want to play it as, which I realize
yeah.
not every short can be super sad, but it seems like you said, it's the limits of the Overwatch storytelling, because they try to, like, and it honestly, I feel like it ties into the idea of, like, they're selling an image of the game, because
yeah.
it feels like they're saying, like, yeah, you gotta group up, and you gotta, like, do heroic things together, just like in Overwatch, the video game. And I don't know, like, but they're also, and they try to also say, like, oh yeah, but it is, like, you know, not every star is actually just, like, living the high life outside of the,
yeah.
like, news cameras. But I think, I don't know, this is an issue with, I guess, my biggest thing for the D.Va short, that, it, like, I like it more than the May one, because the May one I felt was, like, really bad in terms of, like, showing how tragic the thing is that happens to May. Because I think May's, it feels a little too much like, yeah, let's just have, like, cute May giggling throughout the short and, like, just, like, saving the day. Or not even saving the day, but just, like, having her own, like, heroic moment. And I like that the D.Va one shows a little bit more, there's, like, a little bit more hardship for D.Va as a character, and she isn't just, like, super cheery throughout the whole short. But
uh-huh.
I think that it still doesn't reach where, like, the Last Bastion short did, where the Last Bastion short was just, like, that tragedy was the point of it. Because, I don't know, a lot of the stuff in Overwatch story is pretty sad. Like,
yeah,
there's,
it absolutely,
yeah.
or it could be sad, or more sad, or, like,
yeah,
you know, but it's just,
because the world, I mean, but I think about it, like, the setup for Overwatch is that, like, the big, like, savior of everyone, like, Overwatch, the team, is now gone. Like,
yeah.
like, there's only bad, like, only Talon and bad things are happening at the moment. Like, there's nothing really hugely good. It's like, there's pieces of good things happening, but the good is gone at the moment. The heroes, like, in the very first short, the heroes are, like, kind of gone. They're just in the museum, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so I think the story should be more reflective of that. I don't know.
It's grim. It's
yeah.
in the Empire Strikes Back phase.
Right. Which is interesting. I think that's actually really interesting for a big franchise, you know, or a big, like, game. To
plop you down in the middle of everything sucking.
Yeah. But the problem is that there's always been this disconnect with the game too, where like the game doesn't really understand that super, like there's voice lines and stuff, but I mean the game is called Overwatch. You can still play all the characters, you know, together, your Widowmaker working with Mercy, you know, like there's just like, so there's always that disconnect. And I think they almost try to grapple with both of those like feelings in the shorts. And sometimes that it, I think it just makes the shorts hard, because I think if they went super sad with the shorts, it wouldn't feel reflective of the game in a way, in that commercial way. And I think maybe they're afraid of that a little bit. I'm not sure. But because I don't know, it's, we keep going back to the last Bastion, the one about Bastion, the character being the best one, because it deals with like PTSD and like just like the fact, I don't know, like a robot that doesn't even talk, so it's like artistically really kind of amazing. That short maybe was like sort of the perfect scenario, I guess, because it like it does a really good job at dealing with those issues in a realistic way. But I don't know. I feel like there's they could do a similar thing with characters like D.Va, given what they've, the little they've given us, but they just end up making them kind of like not hollow, but just sort of like basically like basic hero, like heroic. I don't know. Like it just feels a little kind of like false.
The thing is that they want to ape so many different kinds of genres and pieces of other media, and give them zero space that those other things could flesh out. Like, D.Va's story is 100% cribbed from, like, Ready Player One, Evangelion, and Pacific Rim. And yet, as bad as Ready Player One was, and all that, or whatever, or, like, talking about Pacific Rim or Evangelion even, however you feel about those properties, they still had the time to dig into whatever it is they were trying to say about that sort of stuff, especially Pacific Rim, especially Evangelion.
And I understand that the short's only 7 minutes, and it's not 2 hours
I understand
long.
That, too.
But The Last Bastion did it in 7 minutes. It understood what it was working with in 7 minutes, so I think it's possible.
It's possible to at least say something a little bit more dire.
Yeah.
But I think it's easier to do that with a robot than to do that with a human.
Yeah, probably is. Yeah.
But it's like, don't crib from Pacific Rim and Evangelion if you are not willing to put in a little bit more of the shitty downside stuff. Like, there's a reason why, like, Genji, you know, not Genji, what's his face from
Hanzo?
Fucking Evangelion?
Oh, from it. No, I have no idea. But.
Yeah, like, because I was like, Genji, wait a minute.
I don't even know if I didn't even know there were guy characters in
Shinji.
Evangelion. Okay.
Shinji.
Close.
Shinji,
that's pretty close.
Fucking,
I don't blame you for
Shinji. Yeah, Shinji, get in the fucking mech. Like, that's a joke, but it's actually like really terrible, because it's again putting teenagers in these really awful positions to have to fight these things, and what toll it takes on them physically, mentally, that sort of thing. Like, that's what Evangelion was, like, kind of really digging into, was just, like, the toll on it. So, that was the thing that stuck with me the most, is, like, and that's why we kind of brought up esports, is, like, man, on a week when a known Overwatch League player wrote a long letter about basically how burnt out he was from Overwatch League and didn't want to compete in the World Cup, which many players are, it's extremely funny to me that that comes out the same week that they do a map and a cinematic reveal where you have five teenage people living in a cramped room in tiny little sleeping pods on a huge airport, like airbase, basically, in the ocean. And their entire room is dominated by basically a big screen with video games and controllers.
Noodle cups.
And noodle cups and soda. And I'm like, woof. Yeah. How is this not 100% like how we treat esports stars. Like
it's very similar. And I guess the part that it's that makes me disappointed a little bit in the short is that even though it tries to show that ish that like difference in like the public persona and the like more personal one, mm-hmm. I feel like it's still like in the like formally like via the short itself as like a piece of media that we're watching, it still does the same thing where it's saying, well, look, D.Va struggles a little bit, but she's still a hero. Like, she's still your favorite hero. And it's like, but wait, you have to go more into the fact that it's more of a struggle. Like, I think they don't go enough into the struggle part to make you feel like, oh, yeah, she isn't just a really, like, amazing gamer and, like, hero, like a mech pilot. Like, but instead they still show it like she is in a way. And I think that part, I guess that part feels a little bit inconsistent with like the story within the short that they're trying to say as well.
You're never going to be able to go too deep because it's going to implicate Blizzard as a company probably.
Yeah,
because
when you said like earlier, like you can't just like ape like these other like other media things, like other shows and stuff, other movies, films, and then just not really fulfill that in their in your own short. That's kind of Blizzard in a nutshell.
That's Blizzard in a nutshell.
Yeah, so
you know, like, this was in a nutshell, but I also think it would be really funny if they did manage to somehow pull off a story or a cinematic that really did dig into the, like, horrific labor practices of making teens be the sole responsible people for fighting off invasions to protect a city, without then, implicating themselves as, like, having really terrible labor practices towards a bunch of teens that are responsible for creating all of this revenue for the company. Like, it's
it's a whole thing. And it's sad because I think they struggle, Blizzard struggles a little bit because there's so much time in between the shorts, and the shorts are the biggest place where we learn about the characters that a lot of people sort of canonize things just from like fan interpretations. So it ends up sort of conflicting with ideas of the character, especially since the biggest thing that is an issue with all of these things is that voice lines in the game are not canon necessarily. So we get voice lines where like D.Va says something sad, like, oh, this, like the destruction of the Omnix here reminds me of home. That might not even, and she says it on like multiple maps, that might not even be true, but we have this, but you hear it so much that you just sort of get this idea that like, gosh, like D.Va's been through a lot. Like the way she says that is just so like sad.
And that's why I wanted something from the, that's why I wanted something from the short kind of envision in my own head.
Right.
Of like a scene sort of very similar to Pacific Rim, where like there's just a tiny little like kid D.Va standing in the middle of like a ruined village.
Yeah.
And everybody's dead.
But maybe that's not even canon, you know? Like, maybe that's not even the character that they want.
They're never going to give us a character that deep.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is we're never going to get a character that's beyond a couple of adjectives.
That's what's, like, frustrating, is that, like,
World
of
Warcraft
has short stories and novels. I don't expect maybe novels, but little short stories, those are do a lot more with a lot less resources than a short. I don't understand why they don't do that. Like, they write these voice lines that may or may not be true and have, like, wrinkles to them. They're like, oh, did Moira do that to Widowmaker? But why can't we have like short stories like that? It's frustrating, I guess, because it just seems like we could have a lot more story to Overwatch, but we don't get it.
Well, they just hired Alyssa Wong as a writer.
Yeah.
For Overwatch, so it's very
Yeah, they and they hired another writer recently too, right? So another woman, so like, they might be like gearing up to do more written stuff, maybe
written work,
yeah,
or like more narrative development. And I hope so, because you know they keep selling this game as having like, you know, heroes you care about and stories you care about with no stories, or you know,
yeah, there's so little to work off of, and then there's so little to work off of, and then like I said, when there's voice lines that's like, oh my gosh, that's really interesting, and then they turn around and we're like, well, it might not be canon. We thought it sounded cool, so we put it in the game, but nothing in the game is canon. It's like, okay, well, then what are we supposed to care about?
Yeah, exactly. What are we supposed to care about? We have, you know, we have a Tracer who can put down like an Emily spray, and she talks about Emily on the King's Row map, but like that's right next to something like, you know, Reaper saying, you know, I'm like a good psychopath or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, guys. Like, again, it's this struggle that Blizzard has between story and jokes.
Yeah.
Or story and memes.
Right.
Or like, you know,
just like
they want
flavor,
it to be
like texture that means nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want the emotional impact and hooks of a story, but they don't want to have to really dig into the fact that some stories aren't funny or interesting.
Right.
You know,
they don't want to do the work for the actual narrative. They just want to have those like feelings as like quick emotions.
They want you to feel feelings without doing anything for it.
Yeah.
So
which means
that's why
you start to not feel those feelings, and those feelings are very like fake.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why. That's why the Bastion short was really upsetting, because on the one hand, that's a complete story that could be completely untethered from Overwatch.
Yeah, I mean, I showed it
and
to
that's
my
why
parents,
it's good.
And they were like, "Wow, that was like Pixar. Like that was pretty. That was your that's the game you play." And yeah, I was like, "Yes."
And you're like, "Nothing else is gonna be like that."
Yeah,
because. If the only way to tell a story is to have it be so untethered from Overwatch itself, to be able to like do that, like, you know, beginning, middle, end, beat, 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 beat sort of thing, that says a lot about your game. A lot.
Yeah. And it's sad because it's their newest game, and it's like the game that there's so much money behind, and I know that I know that the whole community has been pretty tired of like no story stuff for a long time. And I think that I guess I feel bad because everyone gets so excited about like a new D.Va short, and it's like finally we get some like lore, but it's also like this is not we're going to like accept just this, cuz I don't think this is enough, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to be the downer, but it's hard.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. It was good. I liked it, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of like where I'm finally at. Well, I think that's all for this week that we have to talk about. So if you want like the show and you want to help support us, you can follow us on Twitter at Make It Sound MISFcast. You can also find us on iTunes, anywhere that fine podcasts are found. You can rate and review us. It'd be super cool. You can we'll get your review read on the show. Also, Tyler, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at Tyler Culp, TylerColp. I'm also on YouTube. All our streams, even though we haven't streamed for a bit, the stream archives are there, which is youtube.com/Tyler_Culp. I'm also we're both on Blizzard Watch. The Blizzard Watch Twitch channel is just twitch.tv/Blizzard Watch. But I also write for Blizzard Watch, so I have a lot of like I wrote about the new map Busan, and we also have like videos on the site about like play or of us, well, me playing on Busan. But yeah, I'm on there too. So,
and you can find me on Twitter at Apple Cider Witch, and also Twitch at Apple Cider Witch. Yeah, if you want to send us any questions or comments about the stuff we talk about on the show, you can also email us at makeitsoundfiction, all spelled out, at gmail.com. And I think that is us for this week. So, see you later.
Bye.